It's time for me to introduce our guests in the studio today. Like I said earlier, three lovely wahine. We have Tanya, we have Pippa, and we have Maren. And I think we'll introduce ourselves. So, firstly, we're going to hear the voice of Tanya. Afternoon, Tanya.
Kia ora. So, yes, thank you very much for having us on the show today. And I work with WEC, the Whangaroa Environment Centre, and my role is to support projects that are promoting or increasing food resilience in the Whangaroa area. So I get to do lots of things and work with lots of amazing people.
Yes. And you've just moved out here. Finally, Tanya, congratulations.
Thank you.
How's it all going?
It's great. Yes. Thoroughly enjoying it.
Yes, yes. That's good. Yeah. Saves the commute. Clean the bus, saves a few bus gays, I guess.
It does, definitely.
All right. And also we have Pippa. That microphone, Pippa.
Kia ora. Where to begin?
Where to begin?
Where to begin?
We've got plenty of time, so you can tell a long story if you
want. I've been living full-time in Whangaroa for 3 years now, and I guess it's...
You came from...
I came from a gypsy life for a while, so I was all over the show, all over the Aotearoa and the world as well.
Nice.
And when the pandemic hit, I'd been coming and going from Whangaroa for 6 years now, actually, and had had a winter of 6 months here and then was coming and going, had good friends living here.
Yeah.
And when the pandemic hit, I thought, oh, it's probably a good time to have a home.
Right.
And this was the home that called to me. Thank you. And I've been, I guess, my long journey has been one of realizing many years ago the state that the earth was in and the challenges and duress that she was under in supporting us humans in being alive. Mm. And that was a long and winding journey. And I finally arrived at the place that one of the positive places I could channel my energy was supporting local food resiliency and growing food myself and going on that learning journey myself. Mm. And I think it's one of the most magical but also practical and grounded ways that we can support the environment, our ecosystems, our local communities. And that became more and more apparent, I think, as we've had these quite severe weather events in the last few years in Aotearoa. Last year with Cyclone Gabrielle, where we had our state highway washed out and we were almost locked into Raglan. And, I've been involved with supporting Tanya with some of the local food initiatives, including the growers markets. And
which is a roaring success, isn't it?
It is a beautiful little community event for nourishing the community on that physical level through Kai, but also...
And that's every Friday, isn't it, folks?
Every Friday.
Five to seven, though, is
exactly,
that right?
Exactly, yeah, on Stewart Street.
On the lawns, usually, in this beautiful weather.
Yeah, exactly. Or inside if the weather's not so beautiful.
Yes.
Yeah, so, and this initiative that we'll talk about shortly after Maren's introduced herself was sort of born around that time, I guess. It had been a seed that had been sown, and when all that, the road was washed out and the weather events were getting a little bit more crazy, it felt like, okay, now's the time to really put some more energy into growing food here together rather than relying on these fragile transport systems.
Brilliant. Yes. And how long would you say, how many years would you have been growing vegetables and fruit and things like that?
I've dabbled on and off. I've been a helper. So I've, in part of, in my years of gypsying, I spent quite a lot of time woofing in different, whether it was organic farms or retreat centres and here and overseas. And there was often gardens and gardening involved. So, yeah, I've done a lot of assisting. Which for me has been the best way to grow and not have the full responsibility of keeping things alive.
Perfect, yes. All right, thanks, Pippa. And now, Maren. Afternoon, Maren.
Good afternoon. Let me think. I've been in this community for 2 years now. My partner and I bought a lovely little farm out in Te Uku. And... And with that, well, our inspiration for coming into this area and getting some land, the piece of land that we could, that we did, was that we wanted to have do our little bit for restoring the environment. And so, you know, it was immediately thinking about converting to, you know, regenerative practices and planting trees and planting corridors of bush and planting out the waterways and the slipping hills and things. So that was our first program of thought. And then as that was sort of developing and we've started that project now, and a lot more to do over the next few years, I also thought it would be kind of nice to share a bit of this lovely land that we've got with something to do with growing food within our community.
Mm.
And then somewhere along the line, early on, Tanya put out one of
her... Tanya hunted you down?
Yeah, no, she didn't hunt me down, but she put out, as she does, an alert. There was going to be a meeting. And probably on the Raglan, what we call it, the platform on Facebook. And so I went along to this meeting, this initial virgin meeting, which was, Tanya, I think, was growers. You were bringing in, you wanted growers to come together to talk about growing. And I'm not a grower particularly myself. I'm a sporadic and random gardener, but I've grown food over the years a lot for myself.
Yep.
With very little discipline. And anyway, I went along to this meeting, and what I had to offer was the fact that we've got some land, and I would love to share a little of that for something.
Do you want to give us a little rundown of your property, Mary?
Yeah.
Just so the viewers can get a picture in their head, say, I don't know, what aspect is it? Is it rolling flat? You know, which way is it facing? What are the soil types? That sort of thing.
Yeah, it's beautiful, rich, loamy soil, actually, which not all soil around Raglan is like.
No, that's a fact.
It's near the, right at the tip of the harbour. We've got, it's rolling. There's gullies. There's elevated. Did I say there's 23 hectares in our property?
Okay, yeah. Yep.
We've got a covenanted piece of bush that's about a hectare, which is fabulous to have already been fenced off and doing its thing. And overall, it's. I mean, we can see the windmills, so one would think if you can see the windmills, then it's a windy place, probably. Mm. But we do catch wind, but it's not too bad. And we have had a great growing summer this year for our...
For sure. Beautiful.
And not too much wind, which has been fabulous.
Yes, all right. All right, folks, there we are. There's Tanya, Pippa and Miran. And this initiative, Tanya, that we're about to talk about, the Shared Food Growing Initiative. Kind of catchy, but yeah, maybe we'll do a little bit of that. Anyway, where'd the idea come from, Tanya?
All right,
Shared Food... Or Pippa, or Miran.
Shared food growing started as I was really hoping that we could utilise underutilised land for food growing, and I was hoping that we could connect landowners with people who didn't have access to land but were really keen on food growing. So to discuss that, I set up a group through Time Bank as my sounding board and said, I've got this idea. What do you think? How could it look? What will you do? And I had this amazing group of people, and Pippa and Marin were part of it, the initial group. And we threw some ideas around and we created a vision, and we thought about it being urban setting with backyard gardens which were underutilised, with maybe someone who was a renter being able to share that garden. And we thought about things like MOUs and how to make sure it was a good relationship, because people shared how relationships can be difficult in past experience. So we had really good experimental talking times,
and we did have a couple of people who had experience in group growing and land sharing and things, and shared their mainly pitfalls, but also you know, the joys that they'd also received from those journeys. Yeah,
and then really what fell into our lap was Marin's land. And Marin, you'd been actually waiting for 18 months to share your land.
Well, yeah, I just kept showing up to these meetings saying everybody was introducing themselves and telling us how wonderful, what wonderful deep gardening knowledge they all had. And I said, oh, well, I've got land, you guys. I've got a bit of land waiting. But then this was not even particularly what I thought would evolve in the way that it did. But yep. There you go.
Yeah. And a big part of the impetus for this initiative has been recognising through the journey with the growers' markets that we actually don't have a lot of growers in Whangaroa, and we have a real lack of food being grown locally, basically. So realising that we are quite reliant on these external supply chains, and so that was sort of part of the recipe for this initiative to take form.
Yeah. So we decided to go for it.
Good on you.
And we talked about how it could look like and how we were going to invite people. But really the main thing that we put in front of ourselves was this was a learning experience. We knew that it was going to be groups of people sharing their skills and sharing the crops and sharing the work. And we knew that we had to learn how to do this together. And also the other side of it is that I was, and us as a group, we really wanted to set up a possible pattern for other people to be able to be inspired by and copy or modify for their own initiatives in the future.
And we decided initially to go for some, you know, bigger low maintenance crops that we'd only need to go out maybe once a month or something like that, so that while we were experimenting with this framework, that it wasn't, you know, it wasn't like we were sort of drowning ourselves before we were figuring out how to swim. So I guess that might lead onto how we decided to do the practicalities of setting up and what crops we were going to use. But we thought we'd probably get people more committed that if they're only needing to come out every few weeks rather than, you know, every day or something like that, if we had smaller crops that were needing regular watering or weeding or this sort of thing.
For sure.
I was just going to say that was also a big point was also about the fact that of the economies and the carbon footprint of travelling all the way out to Te Uku because we were centred focused in the urban environment to start the conversation, wasn't it, really? And so I'm 15 minutes out of town. That's, you know, people travelling out there is an economic expense. And,
handy enough, isn't it? And speaking of water, what's the watering set up out there, Mary?
Well, we've got plenty of water.
Yeah.
We've got a lovely spring that's at the moment, and we've been told it's always been running 365 days a year, and so we've got beautiful artesian spring water.
Excellent.
And but that was also a consideration, and we picked crops that hopefully wouldn't require watering, which was one of the other aspects of choosing the crops, and they haven't required.
All right, folks, it's time for the big reveal. What crops did you choose?
So we had, from our group of people, we had some experienced permaculture design folk and people who had done larger crop growing on a more mass scale, and market gardeners, etc. And so we all came out and we looked at the land. We discussed areas that we could grow. Meryn took us around and we all threw our ideas together, and we came out with one paddock and two crops. And the crops were pumpkins. And kumara.
Kumara, yes.
Yeah. Great.
Excellent choices.
Great pantry staples, feed tummies, store well, don't require lots of work.
Yeah. And we say paddock, how many hectares would that be to grow, would you say?
Well, at the moment we started with the idea that let's just see what we can handle and let's see who shows up. We didn't even know who was going to come on the which was a big first day, and second day really preparing 100 square meters that's what our plots were, 100 square meters of kumara, 100 square metres of pumpkins.
It's quite large.
In a paddock which was growing all sorts of
the worst weed dock. I mean, it was there were thousands of docks that needed to be dug out.
By an old horsey paddock or something, was it?
Don't know. I haven't been there long enough to know. But
so that was probably the most work of the whole. The whole journey was pulling the dock out, digging the dock out a few number of times.
Not a tractor, all by hand.
Yep.
All by I think if you threw a tractor in, you'd have a hell of a mess because those dock roots are formidable. And they will just, a sliver will create a new plant.
I presume you would have piled them all up and made it like a compost heap out of them or something? Yeah.
So we started off by laying down black plastic, which is maybe a little bit contestable in its use, but that's what we decided to do to just give us a good start. So that killed the grass and the other weeds back, and then we pulled the plastic back after, was it a month or six weeks? And then we all came together on one weekend day and started basically digging the dock out and whatever other weeds were around. But it was mainly the dock that was holding its roots. So that was a bit of a task. But what was amazing, I think we all marvelled at it and still marvel at it when we come together and have our little working bees, is usually weeding, especially weeding something like dock, it's not that much fun. It's a bit back-breaking and it's a bit tedious. But when we were doing it together in this group of maybe it was around 15 people, it was so joyful and easy. And after a couple of hours, we'd been doing the work, but we'd had beautiful conversations, you know, strengthened connections, made new connections, and it really sort of began to show us the benefits and the joys of growing in this way as community.
Do you want to give a shout out to who these, 15 or 20 odd people are, whoever's there?
Well, we had Tanya, of course, and Meryn showed up, and her lovely husband, Rob, who'd give us a few tips along the way and a bit of help here and there.
He's the infrastructure guy.
The infrastructure guy. saved the water pipe when we dug into it.
We cut through the water pipe on the first day, was it?
I think it was the first day. Yeah.
But that gave us our water. We hadn't got around to knowing where the tap was going to be that we might need to plug in an irrigation system at some point, but we found the pipe and under the ground, and the tap emerged within half an hour.
In the middle of the patch.
Absolutely perfect.
And then along with the Environment Centre crew also is Liz Stanway, who has an amazing amount of experience with permaculture and growing and has run permaculture courses.
I presume it would have been her kumara slips you used?
Her tipu, exactly. Yeah. And she grew them and taught us of planting in the traditional way that she was taught here in Whangaroa, which was really special for us to be able to continue passing that maturanga on.
Cool.
Who else have we got?
We've got Finn.
Finn McCasey, who's a neighbour and also has been teaching living design permaculture. I'm not sure exactly what he calls it, but for many years as well.
I think he comes on with Aaron every once a month or something. Yeah. As a chat with him.
Nice.
The morning show, Aaron.
And his wife, Karen, as well, and their two children have showed up week after week or month after month as well. We've got Shai as well, who's been growing and involved in permaculture for many years, and it was his butternut seed that we planted that he's been growing and saving for 10 years. So that was special as well to use a seed with some lineage and commitment to.
Dan and Marve from Hākia, so they've got great knowledge and skills as well. We also had Rākai
and his whānau.
Daryl and Fleur. So there's about 10 households, I think.
There's a few more too.
They come in and out.
Yeah, there are. Mm. There are a few.
Sue's as well. Naranoa as well has come in.
Rachel, who is another neighbour that lives up the road.
Mm. Sousa's brought some woofers sometimes. Dan and Marve sometimes bring woofers. There's been a few that have popped in here and there.
There's about 1.5 to 2 hours work, and then we have a shared kai together as well. So that's it really is quite a festive occasion when we get together.
Great. Once a month you guys are here.
around about sometimes a little bit more. At the beginning, it was a little bit more to set the space up.
Yeah,
perhaps.
And then perhaps the gaps were a little bit wider while the plants were growing because they needed very little help. It was amazing.
Mm.
I think we had one or two weeding days.
So you would have got these things in the ground October?
Yes, we the 28th of October looks like my photographs.
Excellent memory.
So, I've just been looking up the photos.
We were trying to remember on Saturday and none of us could remember.
It was all a blur. The end of October with the plants in early November. And there wasn't much happening over the summertime, but we did have some people going up and checking on the crops. Mm.
We did one or two weeding days and that in between.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We didn't do any actual watering.
No watering at all. Amazing. Mm. We just
how cool is that?
Well, Liz said she didn't expect that the kumara would need any water, and they didn't. They worked beautifully, and we thought, well, maybe we would need to water the pumpkin, but actually the rain just came just in time each time when it might have been a timely moment.
Oh, man, it was a great summer for that, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And with the experts around, they really encouraged us to mulch heavily, and definitely we saw the benefits of that.
From extreme, I guess, the mulch?
No, we had rotten
silage.
Rotten silage. Old silage.
Yum, yum. A beautiful smell.
Smelly. We had a silage day. We all were very perfumed. And I don't presume that anybody came back to town and sat in a cafe after that.
I actually like that smell for some reason, but anyway, it's just me.
And we also had some beautiful horse manure from another neighbour just down the road from us who is an organic horse farming person.
Right on.
So we got a very generous amount of beautiful decomposing manure to help the pumpkins, both pumpkins and the kumara, actually.
So the Weber connection spreads and spreads, eh?
Yes.
And the way that we plant the kumara that Liz taught us, I won't go through the whole process, but we basically water each plant with a watering can of water as we're planting, and then cover in mulch. So, and there's ridges dug on the mounds.
In the mounds,
We actually experimented with two types. So we did half of the patch in mounds and half in trenches, just to experiment to see how they grow, because people like to do them differently. And so the way that they were done meant that they basically, and you know, ridges dug around the mounds and things like that, that they actually retain the water once you've planted, so you don't need to go back and water.
So that was part of that
process that Liz had been passed on to Liz, and she's been her and Rick have been following for many years as well.
How many different types of kumara did you grow? Do you remember?
A lot.
Five. And oh my goodness, we would love Liz to be here right now to tell you what they are.
Need to get her on the show anyway.
She's
coming, folks. Liz is.
There's red ones and purple ones and white ones.
Orange ones.
And ones that store well and ones that don't. And
we're trying to remember, Tanya, when we were at the community gardens, remember Liz was showing us how to put kumara in and that. I thought, did you have five or six there, maybe?
Yes, she did.
I'll be doing
another kumara workshop with Liz, because I think it's just such a wonderful skill to have, and it's such a wonderful food to grow.
And the kumara is still in the ground?
Yeah, we just checked it on Saturday. So we haven't mentioned, but we had a big pumpkin harvest on Saturday.
Yes.
So we all came out on Saturday morning, bright and early, before it got too warm, and harvested gently are almost, it was between 300 and 400 pumpkin, about 350 perhaps.
Yes.
Butternuts, were
they? Butternuts, yeah. So we harvested them, popped them in bags and on the back of Miran's quad bike, or Rob's quad bike perhaps, and took them over to find a sunny spot on Miran's deck where they could cure in the sun and sweeten up for the next couple of weeks. So
it's about 2 weeks, is it? Yeah, because I've just pulled out a few of mine. So about 2 weeks of leaving in the sunshine somewhere, is it?
Yeah, that's what they say. Otherwise, they're not so sweet. They're a bit watery. So the curing kind of hardens them and hardens the skin, makes them sweeter and also store better, I think.
Mm. Yeah. Mm. they store so wonderfully well. I've still got one from last year that I'm about to roast up tonight with the chicken.
Oh, yum.
So, yes. It's still good, so yes.
Butternuts are good storers, and I'm really excited about having Shai's seed because this has been grown really successfully for many years in this area, so it's going to be very valuable seed.
Would be his seed for butternuts that was in like the seed, the Ottawa seed stand just over here?
No, it wasn't actually. It was someone else's.
I grabbed them from there, so I'm trying to remember. Yeah, but yeah, okay, so they're not sure.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. No, we'll have to get Chai's in there. Yeah, we will.
Another marvellous Whangarei Environment Centre initiative, which is your idea as well, wasn't it? The seed stand?
It was. The thing is, it was developed. It developed. A bit of encouragement.
Yes.
Yeah. So we've got the seed stand there. Come down outside the Environment Centre and there's a variety of seeds available for people to take. They're free. The aim is to reduce barriers to growing. There's usually someone you can have a bit of a chat with about the seeds. Sometimes I've got information written up alongside some of our workshops.
Yes.
It's all good.
So famous, in fact, I saw an article through RNZ.
Yeah.
With a few people standing around the seed stand. Very nice.
Yes.
Well, famous in Whangaroa.
Yes.
Yes. Okay, good harvest, 3 or 4 is a lot.
Yeah.
Yes.
And I was just mentioning that when we harvested on Saturday, we checked the kumara. So Liz got in there and dug down and just checked how they're growing. And yeah, so we thought they might need another month or so. Is that?
I think actually less than that for some of them. She's keen to, she thinks.
Thinks our next harvest will be on the 8th of March. Mm. Or 9th of March, yeah.
And
that's only like a week away.
Yep.
Or so.
Okay, quite a month. But they grow at different, they sort of ripen at different stages, so we'll harvest some of them and then leave some for longer, some of the varieties.
Correct.
Yeah. And we're just figuring out at the moment our process and approach, because they're a little bit more complicated in terms of curing and storing. So, yeah.
And this has been one of the absolute joys of this initiative is people sharing their knowledge, which I think Pippa really wanted us to come together and do shared food growing because we share knowledge, we celebrate, we support each other. And it's just amazing when people sit down and we're just trying to problem solve. Right, well, I've cured kumara before in my own setting, you know, when it's a few bucket loads, but I've never cured half a ton. How are we going to do this with the resources we have? What can we design? And you're hearing these designers and these different people, and I can build this. Oh, we've got these resources. We've got some resources over here that's on the property. We could build this. And it's that soft infrastructure that is surrounding this initiative that is really so valuable.
Yeah. Well, like you said earlier, it could be good learnings, all these things for future developments and things like that.
Yeah, I'm going to start writing it all up, all these email conversations.
Yes. And so storage-wise, they're going to be on Merrin's deck for a couple of weeks.
The pumpkins,
and then where
correct.
Figure that one out yet?
Well, it's designed. What we've designed at the moment is this idea of fair share amongst the group that has come together from the beginning for the project. We may decide. We haven't decided. This is a very organic process.
Good.
I don't feel like we've fully decided. I think maybe we will sell some at the growers market to raise a bit of a kitty for things that we will need for the next crop or for the next season or infrastructure that soft infrastructure that we might decide that we actually need to purchase or most likely, seeds for cover crop in the winter, that sort of thing.
Yeah. I mean, for that many butternuts, you're going to need a big cupboard.
Well, yeah, there might be some people who actually don't have enough room or the right space to store them. There'll be somebody in the group that might offer up, just say, well, we can keep them for you for, whatever. It seems to just happen, doesn't it? All works.
Yeah. So at the beginning of the process, we were quite clear that this was quite experimental and we'd be learning together, but we did create an MOU together that sort of went through some boundaries, guidelines about coming onto the property, what we were allowed to bring on the property, the type of growing, were we allowed to use insecticides or fertilisers. And those things were discussed with Merrin and us as a group. And part of that was, you know, the harvest, which we put in is very vague, but because there's quite a few permaculture folk amongst us, we understood the vagueness of it, of being a fair share principle.
And to decide ultimately against using any of the sides and fertilisers and things like that?
Yes.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. Good decision.
I don't think it was ever.
It wasn't an issue.
I don't think there's one member of this group that would consider anything like that. In fact, it's the opposite. It's like, oh, you're going to come in with the tractor to mow that grass, are you? That's that's good. It's a bit violent.
Yeah, all right. Oh, well, that's it's a great story. Congratulations to all of you and everybody else who was involved.
Yeah.
And you were also talking about. Oh, firstly, on that particular, 200-metre blocks, what's going on there once, what's happening with it now?
Again, an organic process, and we're in conversation around whether we want to, you know, whether there's energy in the group to grow some crops over winter, or whether we want a bit of a break and we'll put some cover crops in to sort of restore the nutrients in the land while we're having a break. So that's sort of yet to be decided.
Cover crops are a great idea, right? Yeah. Just tuck them on and leave them there and sweet ass.
But also it's more food, so it's also a great idea.
Yeah.
See where we get to.
What could you actually put it like from now on, really, Pippa? What do you think? We'll tell you. We'll mirror. Like a mass food crop. Cabbages still, maybe?
Yeah, it could be time for cabbages. Mm. Lots of sauerkraut over winter is a good thing.
Spuds, nah. Well, maybe.
It'll be a bit late for spuds, yeah, but they, yeah.
Onions? I'm trying to think.
I think some of the brassicas could be a good idea.
Yeah.
I think the cabbages,
yeah. But more sort of labour intensive than
that's the thing. About the labour as well. We've got a very good group that, and we've worked some good systems out. So part of the adventure was giving this a go, seeing if it can actually work, and then selling what we found. Not selling for money, but promoting what we found and encouraging other groups if they want to do something similar. And we can give them some help and advice from our experiences.
That's marvellous. Yeah, it's brilliant. Yeah, congratulations to you all. It's great.
Because
yeah.
Although we all love growing healthy kai, I think the biggest dream is to supporting others to be empowered to do that, because it's one of the most, I believe it's one of the most empowering things we can do as human, is take that sovereignty over our seed and our food and be able to nourish ourselves and our families. So we would love others in the community to feel inspired to do the same, and we would love to support as we can on their journey towards that too.
The vision is lots of groups of 10 households working together to grow food. Imagine what that could look like in Whanganui.
And as I said earlier, it's so joyful. Like, the friendships and the connections and the relationships that we've created and deepened through this process has just been, such a beautiful... Oh, and Tanya's... you won't be able to see her, but she's dancing behind the microphone. She's had a few growing dances she's offered us over the journeys. There have been lots of laughs as well. Lots and lots of laughs. There was a dock dance, and then there was a... What was the most recent one?
A pumpkin.
Oh, the pumpkin. Pumpkins. Of course, it would have been pumpkins. Pumpkin dance. Very curvy dance.
Nice. Yeah.
Yeah.
And you speak of these future plans, but... Sure enough, Tanya, you're already onto it.
Well, we're hoping to see more of this, because it's a really great thing to do. Yes. It builds community. It builds food resilience.
And you bring it into town.
And we want to bring it into town.
All right. Tell us about that, Tanya.
Okay. Well, this was actually the first idea, but we're still there. If Merrin can be persistent about sharing her land for 18 months to 2 years...
To bolster us along.
I can be persistent about this particular concept. So, once again, it's about connecting people who don't have land with people who have land. And what I'm hoping is that... in our urban setting. In Raglan, there might be people who have backyards, front yards, that they're happy to share with one or two people, growers, I'm going to call them growers, that don't have land that can come on and grow food. And that can look a whole heap of different ways. And once again, I've got this template MOU, and I'm really happy to sit down with landowners, backyard owners, and also with the food growers. And we're hoping, one of the things is in Raglan, we're coming across lots of renters. Many of the renters, they need to change their house yearly, it seems to be. Quite often they're looking for another place, but often they actually do stay in Raglan. So the idea, if they could grow food somewhere, build a garden somewhere that they could do for several years, would be really helpful. It also builds community. There are benefits for the landowners. I'm really hoping for that. So I've got my first backyard and grower connection that happened on Saturday, and they're ready to go. And what's really lovely is it's two single women, and they're both very creative, and I think they're going to have a ball together.
Excellent. Again, building community. Yes, around food.
Yeah. It sure does.
Nice. All right.
So if anyone has a backyard that they want to share, or a renter or someone who wants to grow food, please contact me.
And how do they do that, Tania?
How they do that? They can contact me on food@whaingaroa.org.nz. Yeah. Leave a message with someone at the Environment Centre,
which is straight over the the entranceway into the town hall here in Whaingaroa, opposite Raglan Community Radio HQ. It's the other little pokey little room out the front of the town hall. Yes. Okay.
That'd be great.
All right. I'm trying to think of what covered everything here by our team. People want to get involved? Get a hold of you.
Yes.
And any other future plans you're cooking up, Tanya?
Well, speaking of cooking, we haven't cooked any pumpkins yet, so we are planning a bit of a pumpkin feast. Thinking of all the different recipes and ways we might be able to...
Open to all pumpkin lovers? You can have it in the...
Bring in your best recipe.
We might even end up bringing some of our delights to the growers market as a bit of a project.
Yeah.
Maybe you do like a beer, like a project pumpkin exposure soup competition or something like that.
There you go. No.
But that would pumpkin pie.
Pie. Yes.
Mm. We'd have to just restrict who entered which group so that we didn't make ourselves sick, you know.
Yeah. Well, Marve's, of course, she does a cooking class as well. The dessert one she made?
Yes.
Just drizzled with honey. That was delicious.
That was delicious.
It's like pumpkin and was just chopped up, and then you just leave it in honey overnight, eh?
Honey or brown sugar.
Yeah, honey or brown sugar, and you just leave it there. It's easy, and you just leave it there. Was it?
And then you heat it gently.
Oh, that's right.
Until all the juices evaporate off, and then it's this gooey, pumpkin. It's really good.
It's delicious.
And really easy. Mm. Yeah, yeah. Basically, two ingredients. Mm.
So easy, in fact, that I'm a lazy cook that I've made it twice now.
Yeah, that was great.
Yeah. All right, anything else you want to add, Tanya?
No, I think that's it at the moment.
Pippa?
I think we're pretty good. Thank you for having us on, Craig.
Thanks for coming in. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. Mary? Thank you, Craig. It's been awesome. And I'm looking forward to meeting some more new people that are interested in our project, actually. Mm.
Yes, all right. This turns into a podcast, and so you can share that around. And if you food at Whaingaroa Environment Centre, is that right, Tanya?
Dot NZ.
Not Environment Centre, just at Whaingaroa.
At Whaingaroa.
Thank you for noticing that.
Excellent picking up. All right, well, I think we'll leave it there.